So we're beginning at February the 8th, 1915, in volume 11. Jesus does not want childish fusses of self-reflections. That's VIP. Jesus doesn't want us to reflect back on ourselves at all. He wants us to forget ourselves and to think of him. Okay. So, don't forget that as we're reading this in 1915, World War I is raging, and so you'll hear various things. So, since the war is raging, Jesus is saying that Louisa should not be thinking about her own privations or whatever else, that there are millions of people out there who desperately need prayer for their salvation. Okay. So Louisa said, I continue very afflicted because of the ways my beloved Jesus has with me, but I'm resigned to his most holy volition. If I lament to Jesus because of his privations and his silence, he says to me, this is not the time to think about this. The world war is raging. Okay. These are childish fusses, and they're of very weak souls who care about themselves and not about me. Now, that's quite a smack on the hand, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. In other words, he's telling her this is kindergarten stuff. Let's get on with being spiritual adults. I want to give you 1 Corinthians 13:11. 1 Corinthians 13:11. Where St. Paul says, when I was a child, I thought like a child, but now I'm an adult and I think differently. Okay. So, these people, Jesus said, they think of what they feel rather than what they should be doing. Now, this is a real correction to Louisa. These souls reek of human to me, and I can't trust them. From you, I do not expect this. I want the heroism of the souls who, forgetting about themselves, care only about me and, united with me, occupy themselves with the salvation of my children, whose millions of them are going to have to be saved from the battlefield or from burnt out dwellings or bombings or whatever. These souls care only about me and, united with me, occupy themselves with the salvation of my children, whom the devil tries to snatch from my arms using all his tricks. Now, of course, if it's World War I, some of the tricks that the devil will be using is, how can God be a good God and allow this to happen? How can you have all this suffering in the world and you're telling us that God is merciful or God is love? So the devil keeps twisting everything to turn people away from God. And for the soldiers in the battlefields, the temptation for them would be to despair and not totally throw themselves into the arms of God. I want you to adapt yourself to the times. The times is the world war. The times which are so sorrowful, so mournful, and so tragic. That's Jesus' take on World War I. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
And I want to pray and cry. I want you to pray and cry together with me. So you need to put, I want you, and I want you. The I want you is necessary there. I want you to pray and to cry together with me over the blindness of people. That's spiritual blindness. Physical blindness is not so much of a problem. Your life must disappear. In other words, your little agenda, okay, must disappear. Letting the whole of my life permeate you. If you do this, I will feel in you the fragrance of my divinity, and I will trust you in these sad times. And yet, these are nothing but the preludes of chastisements. That means preludes of things to come. In other words, there's another world war coming. Okay. And I think those who lived at the time of the First World War couldn't have imagined another world war. They called it the war to end all wars. What will happen when things go further, Jesus said. Poor children, poor children. Okay. And it seems that Jesus suffers so much that he remains speechless. He hides more deeply than ever inside of my heart. So to hide in our heart, the kingdom of God is within you. That is Luke 17, 21. Luke 17, 21. And when tired of my sorrowful state, I renew my laments. I call him over and over again. I say to him, Jesus, don't you hear the tragedies that are happening? The extraordinary thing is, considering the marvelous relationship she has with God and the number of times he has taken her in and out of the body experience to see what's going on the earth, she's saying to him, don't you see it? Now, that's her saying, why don't you stop it? And so she hasn't heard, you know, that human beings are doing this absolutely contrary to God's will. How is it possible that your compassionate heart can bear so much torment in your children? He seems to just barely move in my interior as if he didn't want to be heard. And I feel another panting breath within my breathing. You see how closely united they are. John 14, 20 to 21. You in me and I in you. As if I were rattling, that is correct. He's trying to tell her that if she would concentrate on what he's doing, she would be able to participate more deeply. That is the breath of Jesus, she said, because I recognize its sweetness. Now, so this is the new suffering that she's going to have. And it's hard for her to turn around and adjust to something completely new. Okay, that her sufferings are all going to be spiritual rather than physical. But while it refreshes me completely, it makes me feel mortal pains, because in that breath, I feel the breath of all. Now, this is what we've been told all the time. You fuse yourself into the Lord and in him you find everybody. Isn't that correct? Mm-hmm. This is why she can feel Jesus's breath, and she can also now, because she's completely concentrated on him, feel the breath of all souls. So she will sense the suffering of the soldiers in the battlefields. It's very interesting. And that is what will stimulate her to pray and suffer for them. You see, especially of many dying lives. They're the soldiers in the battlefield. And Jesus suffers the rattle of agony with them. Now, this is an image of World War I. You won't get anywhere else. Louisa says that entering into him, into Jesus, she was able to, first of all, hear his agonized breath and in him hear the breath of all those soldiers and everybody else that was suffering in World War I. And that Jesus was suffering with those soldiers in their dying. See, where everything is through him, with him and in him. Other times it seems that he's in so much pain that he sends out feeble moans as the dying wood in the fields with nobody around to help them, such as to move the hardest hearts to pity. And then I continued my laments, she said this morning, and he told me, my daughter, the union of will of our wills is such that the will of one cannot be distinguished from the will of the other. Therefore, he's going to start referring to Louisa as my inseparable Louisa. Up to now, he has only referred to his mother as my inseparable mother. If the two wills are one, they're inseparable. Isn't that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. I put John 15:11 there. You cannot distinguish one from the other. It is this union of will that forms all the perfection of the three divine persons. Because since we are equal in the will, this uniformity brings also the uniformity of sanctity, wisdom, beauty, power, love, and all the rest of our being. So we reflect ourselves in one another. And our satisfaction in looking at the other is so great as to render us fully happy. So each one is reflected in the other, and each one pours into the other all the qualities of our being, like many immense seas of different joys. If anything were dissimilar among us, our being would not be perfect nor fully happy. What makes family life difficult is that you can have five persons, five different wills, and they may be pulling in different directions. That's what makes it difficult. Okay. And Jesus says that what causes the supreme eternal happiness of the Trinity is that there is one will. So there's never any dissension. So Jesus continues. Now, in creating man, we infused our image and likeness into him. That's Genesis 1:27. Genesis 1:27. And Genesis 2:7. 1:27 and 2:7. Genesis 1:27 says, let us make man in our own image and likeness. Okay. Genesis 2:7 is God poured the breath of his being and man became a living being. Okay. So it's in the pouring of that breath that this likeness actually comes. We infused our image and likeness into him so as to overwhelm him with our happiness and be reflected and delighted in him. But man broke the first link of the connection, which is the will. Now, all the sin is in the will. And this was the connection between himself and the Creator. Therefore, he lost true happiness. Why? The happiness would have been in the union of wills. Is that okay? Even more, all evils swooped down upon him. So we can neither reflect ourselves nor delight in him. Only in the soul who does our will in everything, that means 24, 7, 3, 6, 5, can we do it. And in her we enjoy the complete fruit of creation. So this is asking for the final complete union of will. And if you think it's impossible, you're going to hear a testimony about that not in the not too distant future. In fact, even with those who have some virtues, who pray, who attend the sacraments, if they are not conformed to our will, we cannot reflect ourselves in them. I call this having a religion, but not having a relationship with God. And unfortunately, it's far too frequent. So if they're not conformed to our will, we cannot reflect ourselves in them because since their will is broken from ours, all things are in disorder and upside down. Reference Ireland. Correct? Mm-hmm. Everything's upside down. Ah, my daughter, only our will is welcome, that is, into the tents of eternity, because it reorders, it makes one happy and brings all goods with itself. So when we start this journey with the divine will, the Lord has to do a major work in each one of us, reordering our way of thinking, our way of being, our way of deciding, our way of motivating, our way of working, our way of everything. He's got to reorder the whole thing. And as you go on in the divine will, this reordering makes you have more and more integrity, more and more holiness, more and more love, and you feel more and more healthy, unless the Lord gives you something to carry in reparation for others. And sometimes he does that. But that reordering is terribly important. And so one of the keys for recognizing if we're growing in the divine will is that this reordering is happening in us. As Ebenezer Scrooge says, I'm not the man I was. I may not know where I am, but I know I'm not that one. I've moved. Things have changed. Something has happened. Okay. And so you recognize in whatever dim way you do, God is working in you. Therefore, do my will always, Jesus said, and in everything. You see, the problem we have in the apostasy that's in the church is that people are saying that they believe in Christ and they believe in everything he revealed, but they just don't want his morality. and religion without morality is monstrous. And so in saying they believe and at the same time absolutely rejecting the morality of the church, they're actually rejecting Christ. So therefore, do my will always and in everything, and do not care about anything else. So Louisa said, my love and my life, how can I conform to your will with regard to the scourges you are sending? So Louisa is blaming the Lord for World War One. And it's partially true, because he allowed it. It takes too much to say fiat, she says. And besides, how many times have you told me that if I did your will, you would do mine? I love this. I love the way she doesn't let him off with anything. And now what? Have you changed? And Jesus said, it's not I who have changed. It's humanity that has reached the point of becoming unbearable. I love the word unbearable, because then you know why it had to be cleansed with such a severe cleansing. But beside it, I want you to put Habakkuk 1.13, H-A-B-B, Habakkuk 1.13. And Habakkuk 1.13 says, Lord, your eyes are too holy to look upon sin. Man has become unbearable, he said. Come closer and suckle from my mouth the offences that they send me. If you can swallow them, he said, I will suspend the scourges. Now, she's challenged him. He challenges her. So Louisa said, I drew near his mouth and suckled with avidity. In other words, I tried to get something. To my highest sorrow, I tried hard to swallow, but I couldn't. I choked. And then I returned to try hard again, but I could not manage. And with a tender voice, sobbing, Jesus said, have you seen? You can't swallow it either. This filth, this rot from the human race. Spew it on the ground and it will fall on the rest of humanity. In other words, Louisa agrees to the chastisements. Now, when you get to the higher volumes, this is going to be much, much clearer, and she won't be struggling like this. This is very new. Let me just give you an example from the Old Testament that'll make it maybe slightly more familiar for you. When Moses was on the mountain talking to God for 40 days and 40 nights, in the dialogue that he had with God, God said to him, you know, your people down there, they've apostatized and they've committed this great sin in my presence, under my nose. And then Moses said, well, you know, they're only starting and they're only weak. And the way the mother would say to the father, if she's defending the child, is, oh, he's only a kid. You know, and the father said, no, he needs to be disciplined. You know what I mean? And so Moses was defending them and defending them and defending them. And then God says, well, you may as well go down. So Moses goes down the mountain. And when he actually sees what they're doing, he punishes them. And I'm sure God was sitting there laughing. It's just that he didn't see what was going on. But when Moses saw the reality of what was going on the ground, he behaved in a way that utterly amazes you. Executed the leaders, absolutely, no question. Get rid of this rot. Cut it out. We have to start all over again. Now, if God told him to do it, he'd have resisted. It's very interesting. And so Louisa had to experience what Jesus was experiencing from all the rot coming up from the earth. And when there was no way she could take it, if he couldn't take it, of course, she couldn't take it. It was only then she said, I couldn't do it, so I had to. It's very interesting. So Louisa said, I spewed this stuff. And Jesus too spewed it from his mouth onto the earth, saying, this is nothing yet. This is nothing yet. In other words, we haven't seen the worst of the chastisement. It's only 19:15. And he disappeared. So March 6, 1915, the background of the message, once you keep it clear in your head that the background of the message is World War One, then it's going to make sense. Louisa said, as I was in my usual state, my beloved Jesus came for a little while. Since my confessor was not well, and therefore my state had been interrupted. Now, this means that Jesus has insisted, you remember, since volume one, that when Louisa comes out of her ecstatic state, the priest is to come and bless her. And that releases her from the stiffness that she experiences. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. So that's what she means. My state has been interrupted. So it's not like before, when I would come round when called by obedience. And I said to Jesus, what do you want me to do? Should I stay or should I try to come round when I feel free? And Jesus answered, my daughter, do you perhaps want me to operate as before, when I not only commanded you to remain in this state, understood, but I also bound you in such a way that you could not come round if not through obedience. If I did this now, my love would feel constrained and my justice would find an obstacle in pouring itself out fully upon humanity. Isn't that interesting? And you might say to me, just as you keep me bound as a victim of sufferings for love of you and for love of humanity, so do I bind you in order to stop your justice from pouring itself out upon creatures. What would the result be? The wars and the preparations that other nations are making to go to war. Now, can't you see that in March 1915, it hadn't yet become a world war. Other nations were just thinking of joining. The preparations that other nations are making to go to war would all go up in smoke. I cannot, he said, I cannot. At the most, if you want to remain in this state, or if the confessor wants to keep you in it, I will have some regard for Corato. Now, this means the tiny little place that she's living in. That's a pinprick in Italy. And so Corato is such a tiny pinprick in Italy that it would have no effect on the whole thing. And he said, I'd spare something. But meanwhile, things are getting tighter and my justice does not want you in this state at all, so as to be able to send more scourges immediately. Make other nations go to war, and the issue is to lower the pride of humanity. That's the issue. Now, there's a very important chapter 2 of Isaiah, verses 6 to 22. When in the context of the people of Israel, the chosen people, they were in trouble in the 6th century before, 8th century before Christ. And Isaiah, in this chapter, repeats over and over again, the pride of man must be brought low. The pride of man must be brought low. The real thing behind pride is independence of God. You'll do your own thing. We have it in song, I did it my way. Okay. Try not to write on the table. I did it my way. That's the big tragedy. Okay. Because if pride is what's guiding us, well, the spirit of pride is Satan. That means we give Satan open door to guide humanity. That's why pride has got to come down. And there's lots of texts which I've given you before on bringing down the pride of man. The one I remember just now is 1 Peter 5, and it's, I think it's 5 to 9. Bow down before the power of God now and he will raise you up, you know. We have the Magnificat of Our Blessed Lady, that he pulls the mighty from their thrones and raises up the lowly. We have lots of proverbs saying that God always resists the proud and always favours the humble. There's lots of them, but I'm not going to go down that route now. Is that okay? So what Jesus is saying is that the issue, as far as God is concerned, in World War One, is to lower the pride of humanity. Okay. It's really sad. We have to lower the pride of humanity, and so they will find defeats where they thought they were going to find victories. Alas, my love cries and my justice demands satisfaction. My daughter, he said, have patience. And he disappeared. But Louisa said, who can say how I felt? I felt I was dying because I thought that if I had gone out of this state by myself, I myself might be the cause for an increase in the scourges and therefore for the entrance of other nations into war, especially of Italy. What pain, what heartbreak. I felt all the weight of this suspension from Jesus, and I thought to myself, who knows whether Jesus is not permitting the confessor to be well so as to give the final blow and make Italy enter the war. She is realizing that there's no coincidences. The fact that the priest is not well and is not available to her is actually part of the disposing of the situation. How many suspicions and fears, she said, and I came out of that state by myself and I spent days of tears and of intense bitterness. But the tears and the intense bitterness are all part of the reparation that she's got to make. So March the 7th, 1915, of course it's chastisements, and the children of the church will be her own fiercest enemies. Please take note. That is what's ahead for all of us. People who were Catholics alongside us in the pews will persecute us, because the time is coming when the two roads are going to separate. The thought of the scourges and of the fact that I might foment them by going out of this state by myself pierced my heart. The confessor continued not to be well. I prayed and I cried and I could not make up my mind. Blessed Jesus would come like a flash and run away, leaving me free. Now, that is free to decide one way or the other. That's a bigger problem for her than anything else, because you can make a wrong decision. Whereas if the confessor is there and she's under obedience, she's not going to make a mistake, because she's been told to treat the confessor as if he was Christ. So finally moved to compassion, Jesus came and sympathizing with me and caressing all of me, he said. And this whole piece now is the power of love and prayer. Very important. The power of love and prayer. My daughter, your constancy conquers me. So that means she continues to pray and to make reparation regardless of how she is. Love and prayer bind me and almost wage battle against me. Therefore, I have come to be with you for a little while, for I couldn't resist anymore. Poor daughter, do not cry. Here I am, all for you. Isn't that amazing? There's a world war going on, and the Lord comes just for her. It's absolutely amazing. Patience, courage, don't lose heart. If you knew how much I suffer, but the ingratitude of souls forces me to do this. They're enormous sins. Now, these are his words. They're enormous sins. Their incredulity, almost wanting to challenge me. Now, you need to put beside that atheism, which has been spreading since the beginning of the 20th century. And this is the least. If I told you about the religious side, how many sacrilegious, how many rebellions, how many pretend to be my children while they are my fiercest enemies. In other words, modern Judases. Now, the ones who are pretending to be children and are fierce enemies are the ones who are still attending church, but in fact they've gone over to atheism, Marxism, atheism, or Freemasonry. Okay. And in other words, they were a sheep, and now they're not sheep, but they're still in the fold. These false sons are usurpers, self-interested, and incredulous. Their hearts are bilges of vice. These very sons will be the first to wage war against the church, and they will try to kill their own mother. Their own mother is the church, of course. Oh, how many of them are already about to go out into the field. That means to go out into the public. Now there is war among governments and countries. Soon they will make war against the church. Her greatest enemies will be her own children. That's Matthew 10:38. Matthew 10:38. Your enemies will be those of your own household. Okay. Now, I want to give you an example of that, although I would have said it to you before. And that is a Jewish man called Weishaupt was his surname, German, became Christian. Then he became Catholic. Then he became a priest. Then he rejected the priesthood. Then he rejected Catholicism. And then he rejected Christianity. And then he founded the Illuminati. And the Illuminati are much worse than Freemasonry. And Freemasonry wasn't as bad as it is now until they were infiltrated by the Illuminati. So there was one who was absolutely in the heart of the church, now the fiercest enemy of the church. That's what Jesus is illustrating. He wasn't the only one, but he's a very... Adam Weishaupt was his name. But he's one of the most famous of them. Is that okay? So her greatest enemies will be her own children. My heart is lacerated with sorrow. But in spite of all this, I will let this storm pass by, and the face of the earth and the churches will be washed by the blood of the same ones who have smeared them and contaminated them. So an awful lot of people will die. So for that, I want to give you Revelation 11:18. For the bit I've just read, that the earth and the churches, turn it off. The earth and the churches will be washed with the blood of those very ones who have tried to destroy it. That's Revelation 11:18, which says, I will destroy the destroyers of the earth. You too, unite yourself to my sorrow, he said. Pray and be patient in watching this storm pass by. So I want to give you Isaiah 26:20. And Matthew 6:6, just to be very still in him and watch it.
Matthew 6:6.
But Louisa said, who can say my torment? I felt I was more dead than alive. May Jesus be always blessed, and may his holy will be always done. So, April 3rd, 1915. The divine will is like heaven and sun for the soul. Now, it's great to get out of the chastisements and into divine will. Okay. My beloved Jesus continues to come every now and then, but without changing his appearance of threats and scourges. And if sometimes he delays, he comes with an appearance that moves one to pity, tired and exhausted. He draws me to himself and transforms me into himself. Look at that. Now there's your fusing. Okay. And he enters into me and transforms himself into me. So there's your John 14:20-21 again, you in me and I in you. Now, look what's going on. He transforms me into himself, and then he transforms himself into me. The word we use for that much more commonly is communion. Jesus and me, we come together. We have it in Holy Communion. Okay. He wants me to kiss his wounds one by one and to adore them and to repair. Now, you meet that several times in the Hours of the Passion, where she's doing the adoration to the whole body of Christ and making reparation. And in doing that, she's actually making reparation for all the wounds of the church. Okay? And then afterwards, after he has made me soothe his most holy humanity, he tells me, my daughter, it's necessary that I come to you every now and then to take rest and to be soothed. Now, when she's doing adorations to the various parts of the humanity of Christ, he's actually getting her to make reparation for all kinds of stuff in the church. That's actually what he's getting her to do. He said, I pour myself out. Otherwise, I would cause the world to be devoured by fire. Look at that. Now, 2 Peter 3:10 tells us that, in the end, the world will be devoured by fire. 2 Peter 3:10. The world will be devoured by fire in the end. So another way of saying what Jesus has just said is I'd finish it all off. I'd be quit with the whole thing. And without giving me time to tell him anything, he escapes. Now, because he doesn't want her intercessions, you see, it's necessary to have the chastisement. So this morning, as I was in my usual state, since he was delaying, I thought to myself, what would have happened to me during these privations of my sweet Jesus if it wasn't for the holy divine will? Who would have given me life, strength and help? Now she's asking a very good question. O holy divine will, she said, in you I enclose myself. Now please colour this. This has to be your prayer. O holy divine will, in you I enclose myself. In you, I abandon myself. In you, I rest. Now, that's one of the best prayers you can pray. O holy divine will, in you I enclose myself. In you I abandon myself. In you I rest. All run away from me, even suffering. She means external sufferings. Because it's going to take Louisa quite a bit of time to admit that the internal sufferings are more important and that they're more powerful. And even that very Jesus, who once seemed unable to be without me, he runs away as well. You alone, that is the divine will. Do not escape me. Oh, please, I beg you, when you see that my weak strength, there should be no S there in English, can take no more, reveal to me my sweet Jesus, whom you hide from me and whom you possess. O holy volition, I adore you, I kiss you, I thank you, but don't be cruel with me. I love that. So while I was thinking and praying this, I felt myself being invested, look at this, by a most pure light. Now that is the divine will. Look at the prayer she has just said, which I repeated several times, okay? And the answer is that the divine will comes to her in a completely new way. I was invested, her whole being filled. And the holy divine volition of Jesus, and the holy volition revealing Jesus to me told me. Now, the most pure light is 1 Timothy 6:16. 1 Timothy 6:16. God dwells in unapproachable light. And then 1 John 1:5. God is light. So God dwells in unapproachable light, and God is light. So the next paragraph is all about the heaven of the divine will. My daughter, the soul without my will would have been like the earth, had it had neither heavens, nor stars, nor sun, nor moon. The earth in itself is nothing. It's nothing other than precipices and steep heights and waters and darkness. In other words, rocks and water. If the earth did not have a heaven above, which shows man the way, so that he may recognize the different dangers which the earth contains, man would be bound to fall or to drown, etc. In other words, we need the light of the sun to be actually able to negotiate our way. But there is a heaven above, and especially a sun, which says to man in mute language, see, I have no eyes or hands or feet, and yet I am the light of your eyes the action of your hand and the step of your foot. And when I have to illuminate other regions, I leave you the sparkling of the stars and the moonlight to continue my office. Now, just as I gave to man a heaven for the good of his nature, to his soul too, which is more noble, I gave the heaven of my will. Because the soul too contains precipices and heights and crags, and there are passions and virtues and tendencies and other stuff. Now, if the soul moves out from under the heaven of my will, she will do nothing but fall from sin to sin, passions will drown her, and the heights of virtue will turn into abysses. Put beside that John 15:5. Without me, you can do nothing. We keep falling. Therefore, just as everything would be disordered and infertile on the earth without a heaven, it's the same with the soul without my will. It's a very, very good description as to why we absolutely need the divine will. You know, it would be utter chaos. So April 24th, 1915. Finding myself in my usual state, I was thinking of how much Blessed Jesus suffered in being crowned with thorns. So here again, we have the hours of the Passion. Okay. She often comes back to them because she's doing it on a daily basis. And making himself seen, Jesus told me, "My daughter, the pains which I suffered were incomprehensible to the created mind." I think that's absolutely true. No matter what commentary you read, it's just incomprehensible to the created mind. Much more painfully than these thorns, my mind was pierced by all the evil thoughts of creatures. Now, beside that, I want you to put Proverbs 23:7. Proverbs 23:7. As a man thinks, so is he. Or as we would say in modern English, you are what you think. That's why it's good to examine what we're thinking. My mind, he said, was pierced by all the evil thoughts of creatures in such a way that none of these thoughts could escape me. I felt them all inside of me. So I felt not only the thorns, but also the disgust for these sins which those thorns inflicted on me. So there's two things. You have the actual physical reality and what it actually represents. So you have the outward passion and the inward passion. And the inward passion is much worse. Louisa said, "I looked at my beloved Jesus and I could see his most holy head surrounded by spokes of thorns which came out from inside of him." Now, if they come from inside, it's the thoughts of our hearts. All the thoughts of creatures were in Jesus. They went from Jesus into them and from them into him, remaining as though linked together, and how much he suffered. Okay. You can see, therefore, the folly when Christians will go to confession and not actually confess the things they need to confess and try and tell the confessor that they're grand. They'll give the impression that they're grand. And the confessor will say, you know, well, why did you come to me? Like, we know the logic that if you go to a doctor and you tell him, if you go to a doctor and tell him you're fine, he'll say, well, do you mind, I'm busy. Can I get the next patient? I want the ones that are sick. And in the same way, in the confessional, the only thing the Lord wants are the people who are sick, and we'll acknowledge it and let him deal with it and let him heal us. And so you, every now and then you hear him saying in these writings that the sacrileges that go on in the sacraments, that sometimes it's worse to go to a sacrament when you're going to sin more. It's amazing. Things are not what they seem. So And the next paragraph then is very important. Jesus added, "My daughter, only the souls who live in my will can give me true reparation." Now, therefore, put a heading on this paragraph, true reparation. There's reparation and there's true reparation. "And can soothe me from thorns that are so sharp. In fact, since they live in my will, and since my will is everywhere, they find themselves in me." You see, fused in him, we're fused in him, and we find him, we find everything. "Since they live in my will and my will is everywhere, they find themselves in me and in everyone." That's one of the things I love about the divine will, that fusing into him, we can actually help people from within, which is really, really incredible. "And they descend into souls and they rise up to me. They bring me all the reparations. They soothe me. And in creatures' minds, they turn darkness into light." That's a terribly important thing, which we could discuss later if you want. Okay. So May 2nd, 1915. "The pains of Jesus," we're talking about the pains of Jesus because of the chastisement. "And the souls who live in the divine will are the closest to the humanity of Jesus. They live in him and in all creatures." Now, this is the bit that we're moving into, that you can actually reach all creatures in him, with him, and through him in the divine will. And therefore, just think of Louisa sitting in her bed, apparently doing nothing. And once she's fused into the divine will and she unites her reparations with the reparations of Jesus, she's making absolute, infinite reparation for all these poor soldiers who are dying out in the fields all over the world without even knowing there's anybody helping them. Isn't it fascinating that we can reach absolutely everybody, everywhere, you know? It's one of the aspects of the divine will thing I absolutely love. Louisa says, "My days are more and more so very bitter. This morning my sweet Jesus came in such a state of suffering that it cannot be described. On seeing him suffer so much," so that means, of course, something new, drastic has happened on the earth. Okay. "On seeing him suffer so much, I would have wanted to give him relief at any cost. Not knowing what to do, I pressed him to my heart and drawing near his mouth with mine, I tried to suckle part of his interior bitterness." Now, notice what she's looking for. She's looking for what he's experiencing on the inside. But there was nothing. "No matter how hard I tried to suckle, nothing would come out. I returned to my efforts, but it was all in vain. Jesus was crying, and I too was crying, and see that I could not alleviate his pains in any way. It was a cruel torment. Jesus was crying because he wanted to pour his bitterness into me, but his justice prevented him from doing it." So here you've got the battle between love and justice. As a parent, you will have experienced it, that on the one hand, you feel that if a child is not disciplined, that child is not going to become the well-balanced adult that you want them to be. And on the other hand, you absolutely hate causing them distress. Am I right? It's the balance between love and justice. "I was crying and seeing him cry because I couldn't help him. These are pains that no words can describe." Now, what she's saying here will be described much better in the higher volumes. Pains that no one can describe. She's now learning how to suffer on an infinite level because she's doing it in the divine will. It's no longer just physical. Okay. It's a much higher level. "My daughter," Jesus said, sins snatch scourges and wars from my hands. I'm forced to allow them. And at the same time, I cry and suffer with the creature because they're his own images, they're his own people. And not only that, but Jesus has died for every single one of them to save them. And so he hates to see them destroying themselves and causing themselves to go to hell. So he's suffering, and the chastisement is to try and bring some kind of order out of this disorder, to bring somebody to light. So Louisa said, "I felt I was dying for the pain, and Jesus, wanting to distract me, said, 'My daughter, don't lose heart. This too is in my will, because only the souls who live in my will can confront my justice. Only those who live in my will have free access to share in the divine decrees and plead for their brothers.'" Whoops, look at that. Look at it again. "Only those who live in my will have free access to share in the divine decrees and plead for their brothers." It's only when you're at that level in the divine will that you have the privilege that is given only to those who live in the divine will. Who are they? The angels and the saints. That's why we're living a heavenly life on earth. Those who dwell in my will are the ones who possess all the fruits of my humanity, because my humanity had its limits, while my will has no limits. And my humanity lived in my will, immersed in it, inside and out. And that's exactly what he wants us to do as well. Now, the souls who live in my will are the closest to my humanity, making my humanity their own, because I gave it the divine will to them. They can present themselves, because I gave the divine will to them, they can present themselves before the divinity as invested with the divine will. To see that your entrance into the higher courts in heaven can only happen when you are invested with the divine will. We can't do it otherwise. Otherwise, we're on a much lower plane like everybody else. So they can present themselves before the divinity as invested with the divine will, like another Jesus. And they can disarm divine justice, and they can intercede scripts of forgiveness. Now, I think that's an extraordinary expression. A script of forgiveness is that you snatch out of the divine heart a kind of nearly a covenant, do you know what I mean? A declaration of forgiveness, where forgiveness would never happen if it wasn't snatched out of the divine heart. So extraordinary things did actually happen in these wars among individuals. You can impetrate or intercede for scripts of forgiveness for the perverted creatures. "Since they live in my will, they live in me," which is your John 14, 20 to 21. "And since I live in everyone, they also live in everyone and for the good of all. They live hovering in the air like the sun." That's the eagles living high. "And their prayers, their acts, their reparations and everything they do are like rays which descend from them for the good of all." I want to give you John 15, verses 7 to 8. "That is, my disciples will do the same works as I did when I go to the Father." It's absolutely amazing. And so you see that the privilege we have of fusing into the divine will means that in the divine will, we can access everybody, because the divine will is in everybody and in everything. And therefore, we can influence things from the very center. Instead of, you know, marching in a procession or getting 100,000 signatures to try and get somebody to be impressed, you're way beyond that. You're on a different plane altogether. It's wonderful. So May the 18th, 1915, chastisements again. "Jesus will have regard for the souls who live in his will and for the places where these souls live." Would you ever colour that? "And for the places where they live." So the more people who are trying to live in the divine will everybody in the area where you live is being blessed and affected by it. Isn't that very consoling? And you know, they won't know you're doing it. They won't thank you or anything, but it's much better to operate in complete secrecy. Satan operates in complete secrecy, doesn't he? He tries to get you to believe he doesn't exist. And if you believe he doesn't exist, then he has complete freedom. And so the Lord operates in secrecy. You don't see him either. And the battle is completely on this higher plane. And it's only when we shift into this higher plane, we become much more in touch with all the aspects of this battle. So May the 18th, continue in my poor state, Louisa said. I felt my poor nature succumbing. My poor nature is her body. I'm in a state of continuous violence. I want to do violence to my beloved Jesus. That's Matthew 11:12. The kingdom of God suffers violence and the violent take it by force. Now, to do violence to beloved Jesus is to force him to cut the chastisements down and give us a bit of peace. But he hides more so as not to be forced. Okay. And then when he sees that I'm in the act of doing violence to him because he is hidden, all of a sudden he makes himself seen and bursts into crying because of what miserable humanity is suffering and, notice, will suffer. Other times, in a moving and almost imploring tone, he tells me, daughter, do not use violence on me. My state is already violent in itself because of the grave evils that creatures suffer and will suffer. But I must give justice its rights. You see, all the attributes of God are equal. His justice is merciful and kind. His kindness is merciful and just. His mercy is just. Now, when we talk to people about mercy, they seem to interpret mercy as I'm being let off the hook. Mercy is much greater than that. Being let off the hook doesn't help. If letting a person who is grievously sinning off the hook sends them to hell, is that mercy? No. Mercy has to be just. And it has to be kind and it has to be wise and all the rest of it. So all the attributes of God are manifested in the responses that God gives to us. So let's go to the next paragraph then. While he was saying this, Jesus cries and I cry together with him. Many times it seems that transforming himself completely into me, many people call that bilocating into you. Jesus cries through my eyes, and then all the tragedies that Jesus has shown me and during the years before, human bodies mutilated, floods of blood, towns destroyed, churches profaned, passed through my mind. And I remember saying to another class something like, I'm not sure if that has happened yet. And the moment I had said the word, the Lord gave me a big check in my heart and said, you're wrong. It has happened. It has happened. Everything that's described here has happened as described. Okay. Because I don't remember instances from the First World War. There's only one I remember. Because it made such an impression on me. But in the Second World War, cities destroyed and blah, blah, blah. It's going on all the time. And some of the destruction of World War I is unbelievable. So Louisa said, my poor heart is lacerated by the pain. I feel it now writhe because of the spasm, now ice cold. So at one stage, I writhe, and another stage, it's ice cold. And while I suffered this, I hear the voice of Jesus saying, how I grieve, how I grieve. I want to give you Ephesians 4:30. Ephesians 4:30, do not grieve the Holy Spirit. The way we grieve the Holy Spirit is to rebel against the divine will. How I grieve, Jesus said, and he burst into sobs. But who can say everything? Now, As I was in this state, my sweet Jesus, in order to somehow calm my fears and frights, he told me, my daughter, courage. It's true that great will be the tragedy. This is World War One. But know that I will have regard for the souls who live, as we would say, in my will. The translation says, of my will. And for the places where these souls live. Just as the kings of the earth have their courts and their quarters in which they keep safe in the midst of dangers and of the fiercest enemies, because the strength they have is so great that their very enemies, while they destroy other places, do not even look at the point for fear of being defeated. In the same way, watch this now, I too, King of Heaven, I have my quarters and I have my courts upon the earth. Okay, these are the souls who live in my divine will, in whom I live, and the court of heaven crowds around them. The strength of my will keeps them safe, rendering the bullets cold and driving back the fiercest enemies. Now, there's a lot of references I could give you to God's divine counsel. His heavenly counsel, but I want to give you Job 15, verse 8. Job 15, verse 8. And I want to give you Jeremiah 23:18. Now, to live in the courts of the Lord, the Psalms speak about it as well, means that you are taken into the inner sanctum. If you remember the structure of the temple in Jerusalem, you had the large court of the Gentiles on the outside. Is that okay? Then you had to go inside to the court of the women, and then into another court, the court of the men and the priests. And that was the place where sacrifice was offered. And then you had the Holy of Holies. Okay. So the courts of the Lord are to be in the interior ones, not this outer one. Is that okay? But I want to give you, for the whole paragraph, I want to give you Revelation 7, 1 to 4. Because John says that in the chastisements at the end time, that the people who truly believe in God and trust in him will have a mark put on them to protect them from some of the terrible things that will happen. So Jesus said, my daughter, why do the blessed themselves remain safe and fully happy even when they see humanity suffer and the earth in flames? It's precisely because they live completely in my will. Know that I put souls to live completely in my will on the earth in the same condition as the blessed in heaven. Would you colour that one? People who are living, truly living in the divine will, are living exactly the same as the blessed in heaven, with one exception, and that is on earth you can suffer and in heaven you don't. Okay. And on earth, because you can suffer, you can merit, and in heaven you don't merit because your journey is over. So, therefore he said, live in my will and fear nothing. Even more, in these times of human carnage, I want you not only to live in my will, but to live among those of your brothers between me and them. Now, this is a very important statement. That's called standing in the breach. It's the position of an intercessor, standing in the breach. And I want to give you for that Isaiah 59:16. Things were really bad at the time of Isaiah, and the Lord said, I looked for someone to stand in the breach and I couldn't find it. Well, if there's no one to stand in the breach, you get the full brunt of justice. And I want to give you Psalm 106:23. And in Psalm 106:23, we're told that if Moses had not stood in the breach between God and the Israelites, that they would have been wiped out in the wilderness. But he stood between them and he did the intercession for them. So Jesus said, I want you to stand between your brothers between me and them. You will hold me tightly within yourself, sheltered among the offences that creatures send me. And as I give you my humanity and what I suffered as a gift, while keeping me sheltered, you will give your brothers my blood, my wounds, my thorns, and my merits for their salvation. I absolutely love that. Now, you'll hear her praying like that in the hours of the Passion. But if you're not doing the hours of the Passion, you can do it in just one moment. You can say to the Lord, I want to fuse myself in your holy humanity and in your divinity. I want to enter in, I want to take your precious blood, and I want to pour it over all the people of Ireland who are in apostasy against you. And I do that for their healing, for their forgiveness, for their salvation. It only takes a moment. But it's massive what you're actually doing. You need to really understand how massive it is, because you're doing it in the divine will. That's what I love about the divine will prayers. They don't have to be lengthy, but they're extremely important. So he says, I give you my humanity and I give you my sufferings as a gift, and you keep me sheltered in your heart, and you give your brothers my blood, my wounds, my thorns, and my merits for their salvation. So you can be saving souls all the time, and you can be saving them in huge numbers. Okay. I think I'll stop there because it's 1:15.